The Holy Gospel, according to Matthew, the 18th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Peter came and said to Jesus, Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times? Jesus said to him, not seven times, but I tell you, 77 times. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he began the reckoning, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. And as he could not pay, his lord ordered him to be sold, together with his wife and children and all his possessions, and payment to be made. So the slave fell on his knees before him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the lord of that slave released him and forgave him the debt. But that same slave, as he went out, came upon one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him by the throat, he said, pay what you owe. Then this fellow slave fell down and pleaded with him, have patience with me, and I will pay you. But he refused. Then he went and threw him into prison until he would pay the debt. When his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to the Lord all that had taken place. Then his Lord summoned him and said to him, you wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you? And in anger, his Lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt. So my heavenly Father will also do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother or sister from your heart. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. From our reading today in Genesis, we hear about Joseph and his brothers. And if you remember, Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. And it was a time when he was sold into slavery, but he actually was slated to be killed. But they decided to have mercy on him, and so they sold him into slavery, and he goes to Egypt. And here they are. We meet them today. Here they are, and they're standing outside, looking in, and they're hungry, and they're tired, and there's famine in their land. And Joseph is the person who's in charge of doling out grain. And they say, what if Joseph repays us in vengeance like we deserve? And they walk in and Joseph says, what you intended is evil, God intended as good. Today I can't think of maybe a better way of summarizing our lessons for the day. What we intend is evil, or what is intended as evil, God transforms, God creates into good. Today, Peter comes to Jesus and says, Lord, how many times should we forgive? Seven times or what? How long will it be until we take matters into our own hands? And I think today's gospel is all about this push and pull between human retribution or human way of taking care of our own sort of burdens and God's way. And Jesus responds with a parable. And it's kind of an interesting parable because one thing you got to know about this is that, well, it says the king lent a slave 10,000 talents. And you think 10,000 talents, okay, that sounds reasonable, I suppose. But here's something you should know. This is a weird parable because scholars have tried to translate this for us into modern terms and help us understand how much money this is. And it's hard because the economies are different and the goods are different. But really, the best effort is to say that this money translates into somewhere between 200 and 400 million dollars. It's absurd. What kind of king would lend $400 million to a slave? And I think we've got to be a little careful with this parable because if we read it too literally, it says some pretty odd things about God, things that don't resonate with who we know God is. And I'm careful before we really start digging into this parable to say, God does not intend or desire or create suffering. Yesterday in our service outside, I had to say that to our friends who had been displaced from fires recently, to say, God does not intend your suffering, and God does not do this as payment for sin of some kind. There's some pretty bad theology out there, and so let's just be clear. We, as Lutherans, we in this church, we don't believe that. But this debt in the parable, this debt is meant to show this kind of crushing weight of sin, this crushing weight of suffering that is caused both at one another's hands and just be by being alive in the first place. It resonates with something else that's happening in Matthew's gospel, something that we don't always get to see, but something we've been talking about in our Bible study, which is that Matthew's gospel was written 40 years after Jesus' death and resurrection. And that matters because it doesn't change the story. It doesn't change the facts of the story or the way that we would read it, but it changes the way that Matthew tells the story, right? We wouldn't tell the story of 9/11 the same way today on September 30th, 2020, as we would on September 13th, 2001. We just wouldn't, because we know what's happened since. We would tell the history of that day with our last 20 years of experiences, right? Well, it's the same with Matthew's gospel. And this big thing that had happened in the life of Matthew's people, his own community, was that in the year 69 AD, the Jews revolted against Rome. They decided that they had had enough and that they were going to take vengeance into their own hands. And the war lasted 2 years, and then they lost. It was a failure. And Rome came marching back, and they destroyed the temple, never to be built again, looted all of the goods. And then in the retribution and vengeance of Rome to follow, 100,000 slaves were taken. 100,000 Jewish men, women, and children were taken, and upwards of 1.1 million people were killed in vengeance. And so this weight that Peter is talking about, I think that that weight would resonate with Matthew's first listeners to say, what do we do? What do we do with all of this suffering that we find on our shoulders today? Do we forgive it 7 times and then take matters back into our own hands? A few years ago, I preached a sermon. I preached a sermon in another congregation, and it was on the occasion of some revelations happening in Pennsylvania. People were coming forward to speak about their experiences of abuse at the hands of clergy in the church. And it was a very tough time. Court documents were being unsealed and testimonies given, and lawyers were involved, and the Vatican was involved. And I was inspired that week because Pope Francis had written a letter to the whole church reminding the people of the church that God is always on the side of the suffering. And so that any institution, the church or a corporation or a government, any institution that seeks to hide such suffering, that seeks to silence the voices of those who are suffering, any institution ought to be prepared for the facts of reality to come out, because that's who God is. God is on the side of the suffering. And so I preached this sermon. It was kind of a hard sermon. And then the next day I got a knock on the door of my office. And a man walked in, and we'll call him Sam. Sam walked in, and he said, "Can I sit down? I want to talk to you about your sermon." I said, "Sure." And he said, those kids in Pennsylvania. He said, "Well, I didn't live in Pennsylvania, but you were talking about me." And in the next 2 hours, he told me a story of abuse in his life that had lasted over 5 years. And he was a really, really little kid. It was a hard conversation to hear. And as he told me about this, he also said he couldn't tell anyone. This was one of those things in his life. He couldn't tell anyone. His parents were like the people at church, right? Mom and dad were the matriarch and patriarchs of the church, the biggest givers, the biggest volunteers. And so they couldn't hear it, he thought, as a little kid. And so he didn't tell them. He didn't tell his friends. He didn't tell his siblings. He didn't tell his teachers. And what happened with all of this crushing kind of weight of this trauma, if you know trauma, you know that holding it in doesn't work. That the suffering that he was experiencing, well, it ate him alive. It had to go somewhere. And so he said he became the meanest kid on the playground. He, if anybody looked at him the wrong way, he would just beat him up. And he said that reputation followed him from elementary school to middle school to high school. It followed him into his first job. It followed him into his first marriage. And you can imagine where that went. And it followed him into jail. And still he told no one. This is what Peter's asking. What do we do with this stuff? What do we do with a world that is so full of suffering and trauma, sins brought on by our friends, by our pastors, by our family? What do we do with this stuff? Do we forgive it 7 times and then take matters into our own hands? And Jesus says, no, forgive 77 times. And you can actually also translate that 70 times 7, so 490 times. And he tells this parable. And again, I think we got to be really careful with this parable, because if we read it literally, it says that if we fail at forgiveness once, that we'll end in torture and more debt. That doesn't sound like God. No, I think what Jesus is saying today is we got to turn this whole system of debt on its head. Because Jesus is talking about here is human retribution, human making things right. And that whole way of doing things ends in torture. That whole way of doing things causes this eye for an eye kind of philosophy to permeate, so that all that suffering gets turned out onto our neighbors. Sam told me that as part of his work in prison, he was mandated to get a therapist. And over the course of the next year, he told the therapist everything from top to bottom. And he said what he realized is that if he didn't figure out how to begin the work of forgiveness in his life, that he was going to die. Probably he would end up killing someone or hurting someone really badly, but that this suffering was so horrible that it was turning into violence everywhere in his life. So he began the work of forgiveness, and he came to his parents first. He said he had to start somewhere, so he went to his parents. He told them what had happened to him when he was a kid, and he said the craziest thing happened. Not only did they listen, but they turned around and they asked for forgiveness. And suddenly, these sort of building blocks for a relationship that hadn't happened for 20 years, suddenly a relationship started growing out of this kind of mutual need for forgiveness. And then he went to his ex-wife and the same thing happened. And he went to his family and the same thing happened. And as he's telling me this, I stopped him and I said, gosh, I'm so sorry that you were a victim to this. And he said, stop, 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 stop. You never call me a victim. I am not a victim. I'm a survivor. Because I made the decision to forgive. And that's changed everything. And he said, I can't tell you that I've forgiven the priest or the church. He said, it was a lot of work to even walk into church yesterday. Nobody's calling me on the phone to ask for forgiveness. No priest, no bishop, no pope. But he said, if I don't start this work, if I don't do this work every single day of my life, it will consume me. This is what it's talking about in Genesis. What humans intend as evil, God can transform into good. And the building blocks for that good, the raw material that God needs for that work of creation, for that ongoing work of creation, is forgiveness. And I think Jesus recognizes that for all of those sins, for all of that suffering, once, seven times, 77 times, just isn't going to cut it. It takes a lot of work to wake up every morning and forgive those who have hurt us, especially those who are in our inner circles and our closest friends. I've heard a lot of people talking and asking the question about who we are as a church right now in this world, where I think many of us could identify with this crushing weight, right? Stay-at-home parents who are trying their best to teach their kids and to work from home, or stay-at-home parents who are just trying to keep food on the table, or people who are working, or people who have saved their entire lives for a retirement to travel and are stuck at home now because of a pandemic and because of fires and because of God knows what, you name it. We got political stuff on our hands. Oh, the weights just keep coming. And many people have asked, what are we supposed to do with this? Who are we as a church? And I think that our work as the church is to take this mercy that we receive here. We start with forgiveness. We're going to land at the table, which is a place of forgiveness and of grace and of mercy. And it's our work as the church to take this, to transform it 77 times over, and to take it into the world and just start smothering the world around us in this kind of mercy and forgiveness. Because God is looking for building blocks for new creation. And it starts there. It starts in forgiveness. And it's tough. But God takes this forgiveness and says, it's yours too. So start with yourself. Thanks be to God. Amen.